CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Paul Rogers will be telling us a little bit about Track 3. So, what can you tell me about Track 3?
You know, I guess the one of the things I can tell you about Track 3 is our history. And I think, you know, we're especially mindful of it this year just because we're celebrating 50 years. And I think we have such great founders and builders in our past that we're trying to spend quite a bit of time reflecting on that history and how we got here, you know, collecting the stories, the pictures, you know, the memories from over the years. I think we're as strong as we are today, and we have the organization to serve our families, athletes, volunteers based on that history. So it's a special one. So that I can tell you about the history, I can tell you about the present, I can tell you about the future. You tell me where you think it's interesting, and I'll expand on it.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your work with the disability community and how you adapt your programs for persons with varying abilities?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if I go back to the beginning, back to that history, we started out, and our name comes from the very beginning. We had some doctors from Toronto were skiing in Colorado, and they saw this program that one of the Kennedy brothers had on, and they brought that idea back to Ontario and said, we should do something for the kids that need some help moving on snow. And so the initial focus we had was on physical disabilities, and the initial group of students were mostly amputees. And so they skied skied on one ski and two outriggers. So it left the impression on the snow of a three track or track three. That's how we got our name. Over the last many years, our service has evolved quite a bit. I think both in terms of the breadth of our offering and who we can help out, but as well. Just how broadly we can do it and service our families and athletes. We started with just two locations on the escarpment up in the Blue Mountains. So we were at Osler Bluff Ski Club, and we were at Georgian Peak Ski Club initially. And now we're at this year we'll be at 10 or 11 different hills across Ontario. Still up here in the Blue Mountains area near Collingwood. We run a really significant operation out of Craigleith Ski Club over at Beaver Valley. Those are full day programs that we run, but we also run a lot of programs closer to kind of more where bigger communities are, I guess. So lots around Toronto. We have a long-standing relationship with City of Toronto, Edward Bales. We're at Glen Eden in Halton region. We're at Caledon, Hockley Valley, Mount St. Louis, Mattawa, out near near Trenton. We have affiliates that work in Kitchener, Chicopee, and London at Bowler Mountain. And I think all of our, in addition to taking care of many more kids now, we found is from that initial focus on just physical disabilities, we've grown our training and our service offering to handle a broader set of needs. So we see a lot of our student population now maybe have a neurocognitive challenge, a developmental and communication challenge, something like autism spectrum disorder, that kind of thing. So it's not just our adaptations and our teaching and our help for the community we serve is grown beyond just the physical adaptation into dealing with all kinds of different challenges, which we're more than happy to do.
So,
and I suppose the one other, Cam, just really quickly, one other diversification we have is we just started on skis. Whether it was one ski or two, we offer snowboarding and Nordic programs as well at this time. Lots of change over the years.
So with the expansion into neurocognitive types of disabilities, what are some of the key benefits that someone with something like autism, for example, might experience?
I don't think it's really different for the kids with those type of challenges than the kids with physical challenges. I think the benefits are, that they can interact with their community and say, what did you do on the weekend? I went skiing, they're out in fresh air and they're away from screens. I do find that, obviously I think it's definitely the case that probably all of the youth today and maybe all of us too are spending too much time on screens. So, and actually in the case of kids with autism, for example, they probably spend even more just because there's a lot of really fantastic aids that are delivered through technology. So you kind of like call it the good technology. But we get them away from screens and we get them into the out into nature and we get them in supportive communities. Which I think they experience, I hope they experience Monday to Friday, but for the winter programming that we can offer, I think it just gives them, gives them a new skill. It gives them some fresh air experience, and it gives them some confidence and self-esteem, as well, which I think in those formative years, whatever you're dealing with, whether it's physical or otherwise, it's good for them. It's very good for them.
So,
to experience that.
So, in your time with Track 3, has there been any success story that stands out for you in particular?
That's a great question. I think one I'm proud of, and I don't take a lot of credit for this. I just happen to know George Alvaros quite well. He grew up with us from, I think he joined our program when he was about 8 years old. He teamed up with a friend of mine who's unfortunately no longer with us, Lloyd Sweeney. We lost Lloyd a couple of years ago to cancer, but Lloyd and others over at Beaver Valley were his teachers, I think the success story for me there, it's an interesting, like we don't encourage. George is in a wheelchair and became a very good mono skier. So he's in a basically what we call a sit ski. So you're skiing in a sitting position. I think many of your listeners will have seen these, whether it's in the Paralympics or maybe if they ski, they see them out on the hill. Fantastic technology. If you're on a mono ski, your sense of your accomplishment is quite good and your balance is quite good versus being on a bi ski. George kind of got to the high level of it. And he we don't push people on racing, but he was just so good. We did a bit, but his thing was he wanted to be an actor, which he's doing successfully. And so, I think we had a role in developing him as a person. And what I love about George is we kept him. He's one of our success stories where you people that grow up in your organization. The hardest thing we do is graduate people, right? We do, and we only graduate people in our in our community, just because we have wait lists, and it's the only way we can create capacity to serve more people. So when you turn 19, we do graduate you. But George, we were able to keep on, and he's a great instructor now. He serves as an assistant at the Beaver program, and I can go out with him, and I can be behind a sit ski helping somebody learn how to ski, but George is out in front, and he's putting on the demonstration, and he's talking about how to make the turn, and rather than listening to me in my stand up position talk about making a turn, there's George showing them how to do it. So I think with him as well, George, his mother is one of our volunteers, she's one of our community, and we love that where it's a family success story. Where they're all in. So I think he's a fine young man, and I think we've had a little part of it. And meanwhile, he's had a big, people like George are a big part of who we are. Right? We're a community because of the quality of the people we have. And so he's given as much back to us as we've ever given to him. So that's one story that comes to mind.
Mike, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Karen Lee will be telling us a little bit about Parkinson Canada. So, can you tell me a little bit about Parkinson Canada?
Sure. So, Parkinson Canada is a national health charity. We support people living with Parkinson's in different ways, from programming, resources, to support, but also in funding research and really raising the voice of people living with Parkinson's in terms of advocacy.
So, how do you go about reaching out to those affected?
So in terms of reaching out to people living with Parkinson's, it's our job to really make them aware of what Parkinson's is, first and foremost. I think right now, in light of the world we're in, we do rely heavily on word of mouth digitally. And I think for me, a big part is ensuring that we are really being present when it comes to issues that are important to people living with Parkinson's.
So, do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes concerning Parkinson's?
I think with any complex disease or anything complex in general, of course, there's different, what I would say, narratives in potentially what the disease is, what a cure could be, what treatments work. For sure, yeah, we do encounter that. And I think that's where an organization like a national health charity like Parkinson Canada is to provide the best information for people so that they can decide and read and hopefully educate themselves on what's important to them. And to guide them in hopefully assisting them in living their best life.
So, in your time with the organization, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
So, it's I've been fortunate to be with the organization now for 2.5 years. I have a background in health charities and not-for-profit. And I would say, in terms of the moments that I'm most proud of for the organization, is engaging with the community. And what I mean by that is there's different ways of engagement. And one of the first things I did when I arrived at the organization, I took advantage of COVID, is typically, we would probably, when you join an organization, you try to go across the country, meet people in person. We had the luxury of using technology, and I got to probably meet more people than I normally would have. And through that, we had some conversations, what was working for them, what did they like about Parkinson Canada, what did they need more support from. And through that, realized that we really needed a Parkinson Advisory Council. So I definitely have my board, and they govern the organization, but it was really important to me to really still be in tune with the community, with the people that are living with Parkinson's. So we created the Parkinson Advisory Council, and their advisory to me, and we meet every month. Right now, I believe we have about 13 to 15 people across the country of all different experiences, stages of the disease, and We have monthly meetings and discussions to hear what we're doing at the organization, but more importantly, to get their thoughts and advice moving forward. So I would say that, to me, is a really important step that we did at the organization that I would say is moving us really towards that, the concept of the national charity not being the voice, but really centering around the person living with Parkinson's.
So what are some of the most common services that you do offer? What's most requested among your clients?
So what we are probably well known for is what we would call support groups. These are groups that meet and they set their own schedules. And it's really, if you think about it, confidants, people who understand what you're going through. You can bounce ideas off each other. You know, it could be probably anything related to not just health, living with the disease, but everyday life. So I know there's quite a few support groups across the country, and they're very successful in the sense of that feeling of being heard. But we also have what we call an information referral hotline, and we're really transforming it over the next couple of years. Before, people may be used to, if they are familiar with Parkinson Canada, is they might call us and leave a voicemail or send an email and would wait for someone to return their call or the email. We are now making it a service that it's live, shall we say. So when you call, someone should be on the other line, as well as responding as soon as possible. And this too is a service where if you have any question related to Parkinson's, we will try to assist you. We obviously cannot provide medical advice, but if someone says, hey, I'm looking for a neurologist in my community, we'll be able to give them a list. Or, you know, I heard this from my doctor, I'm looking for an occupational therapist. How can I find one in my community? We can definitely assist in that, provide you all the resources, and really be a source and place of advice to somebody impacted by Parkinson's.
So if you could send any message to the community about the work going forward and what needs to happen in terms of support for those living with Parkinson's, what would you say?
That's a really great question, Cam. And in terms of the work moving forward, we know we're all working towards new treatments that would slow down and stop the disease. But in the meantime, it's so important that we continue to support the people who live with Parkinson's now. And for that, we know we can't do it alone as one organization. And where we really want to play a key role to support people living with Parkinson's is to be that place where they can come to and rely on. And most importantly, be that collaborator, connector. If we're not that expert in that area, we want to support you and find that source of information, that support that we might not have, and ensure that people living with Parkinson's are living their best life today while we continue to find the cure.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Thank you, Cam.
It's my pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Thanks for listening to the station. CJM is a nonprofit organization dedicated to our community and you, the listener. We are able to operate because of the funds raised by our communities, but this is often not enough. We are asking for your support, which you could do by contacting our federal member of parliament. Call or write and ask them to support the development of a community broadcasting fund and extend the local journalism initiative. Learn more at ncra.ca/help. That's ncra.ca/help. Thank you once again for your support.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Karen Lee told us a little bit about Parkinson Canada, and we heard a little bit about Track 3 from Paul Rogers. In this segment of our show, Larry Myers will be telling us about NLB Disability Bowls. Tell me a little bit about NLB.
NLB is the Nepean Lawn Bowling Club in Ottawa, and we've been around since 1969.
I understand your role involves the disabilities program.
Well, we participated in a program initiated by Bowls Canada called Just Roll With It, and we had agreed to help them piloting a project for people with disabilities.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the participants, what types of disabilities you saw in your work?
Yes, we had, well, I might just explain a little bit about the program. We were asked to participate, and we were happy to do that. It involved training of our volunteers. Our club is completely run by volunteers. And the Bowls Canada was looking for participants, and they provided us with a few participants. And in our training, we realized that disabilities come in many shapes and forms. And we had a variety of disabilities. Some were intellectual, some were physical. We had a few people in wheelchairs, and that was basically it. But we had trained for different disabilities.
So, for the lawn bowling itself, did you modify any equipment or any of the rules of the game?
Yes, we did, and I would like to note that it was a relatively small sample of participants. We did have people in wheelchairs, and so we needed to research what would be the requirements for a ramp down to the green, for instance. And we were able to purchase that with the help of Bowls Canada, the city, and our local counselor. We did the research ourselves, and one of our volunteers is also fairly handy with physically with making things, and so we came up with what we think is a pretty good system there. The clubhouse is owned by the city, and it already was handicapped or disabled accessible with ramps and wide door washrooms and that kind of thing.
So in your time with the Just Roll With It program, was there any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh, I think just to see the participants being happy to be able to do some things physically and to achieve some success. We had a number of volunteers, as I say, that the club is run by volunteers, and several of them were coaches, and they took extensive training in how to address different disabilities. And I think one of the other signs of success was the fact that the volunteers and the coaches seemed to have a good time too, a pleasant time, and everyone seemed to get along.
So, from this experience, do you think the club will ever be involved with the disabilities program again?
I would love to see that. I think the big issue for us, as I say, was a lot of preparation, a lot of work, and this was planning out over years, and of course it was hampered by the arrival of COVID and all of the difficulties with that. But the the problem that we had, the focus of the pilot project was to address various disabilities, and that, by definition, I guess, went against homogeneity. So it meant that we had we have prepared for certain things, but we would need to get a group together, a group of people with similar attitudes, similar disabilities, perhaps, to make it, I guess, more welcoming. It certainly was welcome, and we had adaptations that allowed people to play the game on our regular surface. We have an artificial surface there, and but we haven't continued with it for a couple of reasons this year, and the biggest reason, of course, was us getting over COVID. I think that was the biggest reason. We lost a number of our volunteers, and so we were short-staffed. Our board of directors was depleted, and so we're getting back to where we were and hope to progress in the future. My recommendation would be to look at a specific range of disabilities and focus on that.
So what were some of the key benefits for the bowlers themselves coming in and having a chance to participate in sport regardless of the ability level?
Well, I think they enjoyed that. I think it certainly showed with some of the younger ones how pleased they were at their success. As in a couple of cases that I can picture, with the coaches taking the time to address particular issues, and be meticulous and careful and repetitive, they were able to achieve success that I think perhaps otherwise they might not have.
I'd like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Friends, I always love disability sports stories. Whether it be the story of an individual out for personal enrichment or someone who's playing as part of a team, I don't think there's anything quite so freeing in disability life as being a part of sport. Some people might think, with an acquired injury in particular, their sporting days are over. There's nothing they can do. However, I maintain that regardless of the disability, regardless of the ability range a person started with, they can find a way to adapt. And that strengthening you gain from being part of an athletic situation can be something that strengthens you in ways you don't even realize. If you look at people like Jeff Thiessen, for example, he lost his hands in an accident. However, he went on to speak to and to build up so many people. He helped them see there is a sport for everyone, regardless of what they might think at the start, the outset. There's always a way. There's always an adaptation to be had. And that's disability life in a nutshell, I think. Just thinking outside the box, creating something where hopelessness had once existed. If you build something that shines a light into the disability world, whether it be in sport, education, better laws, better transit, no matter what it is, you're setting that precedent, makes it so much easier for the next person to look and to say, they did it, so why not me? It's not a matter of duplicating another's success. It's a matter of finding what speaks to your heart and following it. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.